All right, today, July 6th, 2021 at 6:01 p.m. is a regular scheduled meeting of the Sheboygan Main Street Downtown Development Authority. I, Chairman Eric Villanueva, now call this regular meeting to order. Can we have a roll call, please?
Kasten?
Yes.
Krongeier?
Here.
Eckhart?
Here.
Con King?
Here.
Mallory?
Here.
Schneider?
Here.
Stemke?
Here.
Villanueva?
Here.
Weir?
Here.
Tebow? Thank you, everyone.
Okay, so first item on today's agenda is the consent agenda. All items listed under it are considered or will be enacted by one motion. There will be no separate discussions of these items. If there is any questions or any motion for a discussion, it will be removed and considered separately. That being said, is there any objections or questions regarding the consent agenda?
I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
I would second the motion. All right, motion to approve consent agenda. Okay, so consent agenda approved. Next order of business, old business. The election of officers, vice chairperson, consideration to appoint the Downtown Development Authority vice chairperson. Are there any nominees? Is there a motion to nominate to appoint a vice chairperson?
Yes, I would like to nominate John Kasten.
Is there a second to this motion? Okay. Motion to appoint John Kasten as vice chairperson of Sheboygan Main Street TDA. Does there need to be any discussion? Are you ready to vote? John Kasten, do you accept the nomination?
Gladly.
There's an uncontested nomination, so let's now move to a vote.
Krongeier?
Yes.
Eckhart?
Yes.
Con King?
Yes.
Mallory?
Yes.
Schneider?
Yes.
Stemke?
Yes.
Villanueva?
Yes.
Weir?
Yes.
Thank you, everyone.
Excellent. Congratulations, Mr. Kasten.
Thank you so much.
Next, secretary. Consideration to appoint a secretary for the Downtown Development Authority. Is there a motion to nominate? To appoint a secretary?
I'll make a motion. Yeah.
Is there a second to this motion?
Nobody.
Is there a second? Did you say?
Well,
I'm nominating Christine King. I started.
Okay, motion by now vice chairperson Kasten and seconded by Schneider. Does there need to be any discussion?
I have some good questions. So maybe obviously I'm trying to take notes right now, and I'm not doing a very good job. So who types these up, and also what happens if I cannot attend the meeting?
The meeting is recorded, okay. So you'll be able to listen to a recording after the meeting.
Okay.
I always take notes during the meeting, but also listen to the recording while I type up the minutes.
Okay, so then I can just hand that over to you?
Yes.
After the meeting?
Yes. Well, the secretary types up the minutes.
All right, and then email them to you.
Correct.
Okay. Any questions you
have? I'll just do the best I can. That's all I can do.
All right, so Ms. Con King, do you accept the nomination?
Yes.
Okay. I guess I'll call a vote then.
Kasten?
Yes.
Krongeier?
Yes.
Eckhart?
Yes.
Mallory?
Yes.
Schneider?
Yes.
Stemke?
Yes.
Villanueva?
Yes.
Weir?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Item number 5, new business. First is Downtown Development Authority, TIF and Development Plan Update by Paul Lippens and Daniel Bouchard.
All right.
Paul and Daniel are both joining us via Zoom this evening.
For sure. I hope everybody can see the screen and see the presentation. We kind of put the update tonight into just a few slides. We have been before, so you probably know us. I'm Paul Lippens, Vice President with McKenna. I'm working with my colleague Danielle Bouchard, Senior Planner on the DDA plan. Between the last time we spoke with the DDA and now, we've done a little bit of public outreach. And that's mostly what we want to present this evening. So those would be defined as our stakeholder roundtables, mini workshops, I guess. Online survey was conducted. And then next steps, really, we have a schedule to present. We're working to draft the plan and kind of want to walk the DDA through our kind of interim schedule to get between now and when we will have a draft plan for you. So for the stakeholder workshops, we did 3 roundtable meetings. They were all held on May 26th. We wanted to space it up during the day. So we did one actually before work. So anyone who wanted to participate before they went to work could come to that one. We did one in the middle of the day, and then we did one in the early evening, just to have a little bit of flexibility. I'd say probably between, 6 and maybe 8 or 10 people were at each meeting. I didn't pull together the attendee list for this update today, but it was pretty good participation actually for a roundtable discussion of this type. We really target between 8 and 10 people per meeting. So I think we got a little lower than that for some, but right on the money for I think one was a little lower and the other two were right on the money for the amount to participate. I think the biggest part of the discussion that was interesting and most fruitful, most of the time was spent on brainstorming a project list. I think probably at least a few of the DDA members, if not all of you, participated. So they were really cool discussions, really exciting. The other thing we used this to do was to confirm the broad 4 goals that we drafted for the plan to make sure that we were on the right track, that those goals would really cover and address most of the project activities that we heard the DDA would want to do during this. And we also took the opportunity in our online survey to confirm the plan goals as well. And I think what we found was, for the most part, there was interest, and I would say pretty consistent interest in all of the 4 goals that we drafted. I think that they will appear in Danielle's update in a little bit. Danielle's going to cover the online survey. So some of the ideas that came out of the first workshop, an interactive children's museum, a lot of focus on riverfront improvements, restaurant and business support, and there was some talk about keeping businesses open in the evenings as well. We talked about maybe at least starting with 1 day per week for that type of event to make sure people knew to come. And that's something that could be promoted as part of a programming effort. More walkability, again, connecting to the river. We talked a lot about wayfinding signage and creating gateways in most of the roundtables that came up. And then workshop 1 also talked a little bit about bikeability. Some of the highlights from workshop 2, we talked a little bit more specifically about some of the problem properties on the riverfront and how to connect those with the city's master plan and land use plans. Also, whether or not some of the larger industrial uses were appropriate. While I think this isn't really the city's land use plan, I think thinking about some of those larger properties is certainly within the context of the plan. I think we made a list of some of the specific properties that are of the most interest in, at this workshop as well, which we'll kind of consider that as we draft the programs and projects for the plan for the DDA to review. Mixed-use developments was a big highlight in this one. This was one where we talked a lot about public art and the value of public art in the DDA district. We talked a little bit about ADA accessibility, specifically to the Gordon Park. Rear building facade improvements, improved pedestrian experience, and nightlife. Again, activating downtown throughout more periods of the day was something that was interesting. And I think this might have been the one where we talked specifically a little bit about continuing the work that the DDA and partners are doing to create events in the downtown area. Workshop number three, coordinating the vision with all city organizations. Again, some effort to create more pocket parks, smaller parks in the DDA, and connect with the broader city and regional recreation efforts as well. This was another one where we talked a little bit more about some of those non-hardscaping projects, some of the soft planning activities, specifically supporting business entrepreneurs, incubators, and I'm gonna see if I get, this was a new word for me. I remember I got teased a little bit, but I think it's pronounced Wanigan. So did I do that one right?
You got it.
I got it. All right. These are boats or barges, right? This is a pretty interesting thing. But I liked that conversation for sure. I gave away the fact that I'm a downstater on that one, but it definitely was a cool conversation. Riverfront landscape enhancements, including Festival Square. Again, public art came up. So I think we should hear and take from all three of these that art is very important to the future of Sheboygan. And I think it's something we should really make an effort to call out in our project list for the DDA plan. We talked about underutilized parking lots, trails, recreation, bike rentals, actually tying in some of the recreational opportunities with some of the businesses was talked about a little bit in this. And then talking a little bit about branding opportunities to, you know, further position Sheboygan's downtown within the region. So that's a summary of the workshop conversations. Danielle's going to talk a little bit about the online survey results. Danielle?
Thank you. So as Paul mentioned, we did advertise and put together an online survey open to the public and business owners and anyone who wanted to take it that has any stake in downtown Sheboygan. Overall, we received 22 survey responses. It was open from like the beginning of June till I believe it's still open today. So most of the responses that we received are were within like the first, second week of June. Some of the most common responses that we've got for downtown improvements, which I think is a great way to, recognize and validate the goals that we have already discussed previously with city staff, with the DDA, and with our roundtable workshops is riverfront enhancements, sidewalk connectivity, recreation opportunities, business diversity, and public art. Like those are kind of like that we kind of keep seeing pop up again and again. So we're going to make sure that that has a special emphasis in the DDA plan to make sure that everything is covered in that capacity. More specifically for the survey results, 60% of respondents noted that they visit Sheboygan, downtown Sheboygan every day. 20% responded once a week. And then again, most respondents selected that they visit downtown Sheboygan for restaurants and bars, as well as retail shopping. I do think that it is important to note that many of the responses that we received came from business owners downtown. So that's likely where you see that 68% as visiting downtown Sheboygan every single day.
And I wanted to know these two add to what like 95%. So the people that were responding are, really familiar with downtown.
Yes, yep. And then the other ones are, residents or people who may live nearby but aren't necessarily business owners or residents within Sheboygan. As Paul mentioned, we did a little bit of a deeper dive into the project goals that we have identified a couple months ago as part of our brainstorming process with the DDA group, if you guys recall. So the goal that ranked number one is making places, number two, promoting community, number three, connecting organizations, and number four, foster businesses. It is interesting to see this makeup that, you know, it seems that business owners specifically are more, of course, interested in utilizing DDA resources to build and enhance, you know, the unique character and charm and historic presence of downtown Sheboygan. For this question, we asked respondents to select all that apply for what they think should be created in downtown Sheboygan. Of course, these are the top three answers, which this one was a little surprising to me, that outdoor seating and dining opportunities vastly outweighed the other options that we had on the list, and then closely followed by entertainment opportunities, and then community events and programs, which kind of are along the same vein as these common themes that we keep seeing again, especially for entertainment opportunities and business diversity. For project ranking, this list essentially derives from the preliminary list that we came up with in working with city staff, and then our first visioning session that we had with this group a couple months ago. So of course, the top five responses for the most important projects that the DDA should focus on is riverfront improvements. Again, not a surprise there, facade improvements, retail and business development, sidewalk connectivity, and housing development, which housing was the first time that this has kind of popped up. However, I do think that this is kind of important to emphasize that the mixed use development idea that has kind of popped up now and again as well.
So, all right, so for next steps, I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the work we're doing in the background. We are working to develop TIF estimates to include in the plan. We're working on growth assumptions, you know, conservatively. I think we could project a TIF with 2% growth. I think we are in evaluating some more aggressive forecasting. You know, we could make a case for like a 3.5% growth with this TIF, given some of the recent trends in real estate, particularly real estate up in the northern part of the state. The other thing that we're doing is some research and adjustment based on the existing tax rules to adjust and account for tax abatements that will be ending during the span of the TIF. So we, with thanks of Katie and Bobby, were able to get some of that information from the assessment department, and we're factoring that into our calculations. And then, you know, I think our assumption is that the library will continue to opt out, but I just put in here, you know, whether or not it would make sense to do an appeal to the library, if any of the projects that might be included in this plan might benefit the library, or could we plan some projects that benefit the library, you know, and I'm throwing the question out there is, you know, would it be valuable for someone on the DDA or the board to reach out to the library board about that decision? I would say, just for the purpose of tonight's discussion, I think it's fine just to assume the library will opt out again and plan it that way. But I think now is the time to make that decision as we kind of draft and work. And then finally, as part of the update tonight, we just want to present this interim schedule. Oh, one of the things that I didn't spend a lot of time on is we've also been working on the background to figure out what we should do about the citizen committee, the DACC, and we have decided to form the DACC. Our research revealed that it's not uncommon for cities to field a DACC of less than 9. The statute requires 9, and the city has done a substantial amount of outreach to try to field the 9-member committee. We've also done a lot of research, and we're not actually certain that there are more than 100 residents in the DDA. However, in doing this outreach, we have found 3 volunteers, and we think it's probably best just to form a DACC with those 3 people, because there are residents in the downtown, even if there's not 100. So we're working with city administration to help draft a resolution that will be included on next week's city council agenda to officially form the DACC, which has to be formed by an act from council. And then what we're planning is to do another roundtable discussion. I know we had one of those members who's volunteered actually participate in a roundtable, but there's no harm, I think, in asking them to at least have an informal discussion with us and the other members to make sure that that group is substantively involved in kind of the same way that we've offered other stakeholders to be involved in the process. So we do want to schedule that in the coming weeks, targeting the week of the 26th for that. We are also working right now to draft a plan, and we would like to, in talking with Katie, we'd like staff to do kind of the first review of that plan with us so that we can present a plan that's had some at least internal vetting to the DDA. Our plan is to next month at your meeting, attend the DDA meeting to discuss a draft plan. And then the project schedule we put together actually had a plan or a webinar planned as well. We think it would be a good idea to do that webinar while we have a draft plan on hand. Currently, we're not planning to release the draft plan until after that webinar, but what we will do in that webinar is present all of the, or a summary of the project recommendations and the TIP recommendations so that we can essentially be asking people for feedback on the preliminary recommendations that we've drafted in the plan. We'll also give us an opportunity to incorporate some of those comments before we officially release the plan. So if you think about it, the DDA, we'd like you to have the plan in hand when we do that webinar, and we can take some of your comments along with the comments at this webinar into consideration before we actually issue that draft plan. While we also want the DACC members to be involved in that part of the process, there's a statutory requirement for the DACC to have an opportunity or a formal consultation on that plan. So our hope was to kind of initiate that formal process in early September. I believe they're required to have that. Daniel, can you help me with how many days in advance they're supposed to review the plan?
I know that the public hearing has to happen at least 90 days after the DACC is established, and the public hearing notice has to go out 20 days prior to the public to when it happens. So I would say prior to 20 days before it goes up on the docket for adoption.
Prior to the public hearing notice. I think that makes sense. Well, so that's our plan. We want to do it prior to the public hearing notice. And then we want the plan adoption to happen in early October. The public hearings are held at a DDA meeting, I believe. Is that right? Danielle, will you help me with that too as I'm looking at this schedule here?
If the public hearings are held at DDA meeting?
Correct.
I believe they're held by city council, but I will confirm.
Okay. Somewhere in here before the council adopts, I think there's a DDA.
Because I think that the public hearing and the adoption meeting occur at the same time. So they'll have a public hearing for adoption.
Gotcha. I think that what might be, I apologize to DDA members for this little snafu here, but I think this might be a DDA adoption, and the council, if there's council action, it might be after that. But I know the board has to adopt the plan, so.
Yes, yep, I apologize for that.
Mm-hmm. No, that's okay. We'll sort that out, but definitely the DDA is going to have a public hearing and review this. And if the council, if we send it to council, it will probably be after this October 12th. So that is the last slide of, and let's go to comments. And maybe while we have a little discussion here, let's just try to verify that schedule on the DDA meeting for everybody. All right, so I'm gonna stop my share and go to Katie for questions.
Does anyone have any questions for?
I would assume the DDA would be adapting at the first week of October, right?
Yes, we would adapt the plan first and then send it to City Council for final. Right.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think we probably should have had two meetings on that schedule.
We made the first.
We're going to verify right now how that would happen.
Yeah, we meet the first Tuesday of each month, so that would be just the Tuesday a week before that council meeting.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
What's the reaction to the other parts of the schedule? I think the key thing here is the DACC review, which I think is new for DDA board members, and then the idea that we would do a webinar while the DDA is reviewing and commenting on that first.
I have a question on that. What was the rationale for not having the draft report available for those attending the webinar and only having the DDA members have it in advance? What's the rationale for doing that?
It certainly could be done either way, but it's not uncommon to have basically a list of preliminary recommendations that you present, with the idea that you're using that webinar to validate those preliminary recommendations before they're formally released in a draft document. So the idea is that if there are kind of more subtle details in the way the narrative is presented, the DDA board might want the opportunity also to provide that type of comments prior to releasing a draft plan. So it's really just a way of structuring the review and structuring the content. In a webinar format, you don't really get like a page by page comments on a plan from people attending a webinar. So even if we did release the draft plan, I don't think we would get comments of substance on detailed elements at a webinar, if that makes sense. Or at least I would say it's uncommon in my experience, you don't usually get those types of comments at a webinar.
It just seemed to me a little more transparent if the draft was actually circulated in advance to everyone.
Well, it certainly will be provided, and there's a statutory review period. So I think both methods are definitely transparent, right? One method is the idea that you're further vetting the preliminary recommendations of the plan prior to even releasing a plan. So for instance, at that webinar, if we got some really great ideas that weren't in the plan yet, we would draft them and put them in the plan before it was released. So I definitely can confidently say I think both methods are transparent and a fair process that are common. I think we could confidently do either, but with the DDA's feedback, I think we'd be happy to adjust the schedule to have a webinar after the draft is completed as well. I think also remember that when the draft is completed, that's when the public hearings happen. So the public hearing and the webinar are different if we do it the way we proposed in the schedule, if that makes sense.
Does anyone else have any other further questions?
Yeah, you probably said it. What does DACC stand for?
Development Area Citizens Committee. And it's composed only of residents living within the DDA district. Okay.
Development Area Citizens
Committee.
Do we know how many residents definitively live within the DDA?
No.
Okay, but we know less than 100.
Based on the feedback we've received, I've sent mailings to all property addresses that I could find for the DDA district. Many of those were returned back as undeliverable because the property was vacant. So based on those findings and the average number of people per household in this area, we are led to believe that there are less than 100 people in the district.
And then is the requirement of like a minimum threshold to in order to have a DACC?
If there are 100 or more residents, it's required to have a DACC. But since we've already had community members volunteer for this committee, we feel that it's still important to receive their feedback.
Thank you. Can an estimate of what you think will be kind of where we're growing with the residential opportunities that are currently developing? Just to put you towards that closer to 100 or no?
No, it's, yeah, it's still kind of hard to say. But, yeah.
Does that board keep going after the
process? No. No. They only have to meet one or two times during the process just to give feedback. They certainly could be involved in a committee or as a board member in the future, but yeah.
So I'm reviewing the act here again as we are talking through the adoption process, and I'm remembering that we actually did verify this a couple weeks ago. It's pretty clear in the act to me that the adoption process references the governing body, which is City Council, which is, I think, why we prepared the schedule as we did. Right now, I am not finding where it even says that the DDA board adopts the plan. So I'm gonna reread it. But either way, I think we need to do a DDA adoption the week prior, as was suggested by a DDA member. So we shoot for that council meeting on the 12th. We'll shoot for the DDA meeting prior to that. So the way the process would be is we would have the DACC make a recommendation to the DDA board, and then we would have the DDA board make the recommendation to council. So I apologize for my stumbling over that a little bit, but I think it's confusing that the act actually does refer to the legislative body, which it clearly defines as the elected body, which is council. So that's where the public hearing happens, and that's where the adoption happens, the official adoption. So that's my read of the act.
And then I have another question. One of the surveys, it was indicated on one of them that housing development was an area of interest. Does housing development mean construction of new residences, or is it the renovation of current ones, or?
I think it could definitely be both.
Okay.
Any new housing? Yeah.
Okay, so housing development at large.
Okay. Okay, thank you so much, Paul and Danielle, for your update this evening, and we'll look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, everyone. We'll probably sign off, but we look forward to seeing you next month.
Thank you.
Great, thank you. Bye. And before we go on, I just want to clarify for the record that the previous motions to appoint John Costin as vice chair and to appoint Kristen Compton as secretary were carried unanimously. Sorry. Congratulations. Sorry about that. Okay. That being said, moving on to our next item on the agenda is consideration to recommend a commercial rehabilitation tax abatement for 232 North Main Street. Is there a motion to approve that tax abatement?
We actually have the owner of that building present at the meeting.
I just wanted to attend if anybody had any questions, and I actually have an update, architectural drawings of what it's actually going to look like. So if you'd like to see that, I can present.
I'd love to see those.
I'm Jane Cotter, by the way. Some of you know me, some of you haven't met me yet. COVID kind of broke up a lot of opportunity to get to know everyone, but through my wonderful friends, John and Marcella, I fell in love with Sheboygan and fell in love with what everybody is doing. I'm getting teary for a second. So my husband, Jeff, and I, and my two sons, Ian and Brody, we are embarking on developing Sheboygan Coffee Roasters. We want to create a family-friendly atmosphere and be able to show the coffee roasting process, kind of take off to when you go to Mackinac Island and you watch the fudge. We want everyone to be able to come in and see that in motion and have a full barista station and a full kitchen. We're going to have breakfast and lunch items, plenty of seating inside, and then also our retail kitchen shop area. The back of the building, I'll show you everything in a second, but the back of the building is actually going to be a salon called Flaunt, a unisex salon. Tracy Baker would be my tenant. She had a shop for years in the Mackinac City area, and she works a lot on the island, but she would like to set up shop in downtown Sheboygan. That building also has an apartment above that needs a lot of, the whole building needs a lot of renovation. There's an apartment above, a two-bedroom apartment that needs to be fully renovated so that we can attract more downtown residents. Let's see. I was able to get it set up next to the Sheboygan Title Company because that is our neighbor. And I'm sure you're all familiar with the building at the corner of Main Street and Division. We are like a big shoe. So we wanted to be able to design something that was going to complement the title company and also close in, tie in that whole block because the building and the property runs from Main Street all the way to Division to Water Street. And a lot of what's been discussed earlier, our design and what we'd like to have this, we want to increase more traffic in downtown at that corner, of course. But we want to tie everything in so that as the Riverwalk is developed in all of that area, that we just bring it full circle. So it's a little of a European look, but again, just we want to create that warm atmosphere where everyone's invited in. You'll be able to see the roasting process from this window, and we're creating a larger window right here. And that will be nicely lit at night too. So it'll make that corner really pop. One of the things that happened, well, let me back up. We purchased the building right before COVID hit. So I had a long time to think about what we wanted to do here. One of the things that came out of our COVID experience was we really want to develop a walk-up window. So, you know, that's behind us as far as COVID goes. But we still think that that's a really fun option so that people, they don't have to go in. If they don't want to, they can come right up and have their coffee and their breakfast and lunch from there. because we also want to take down the garage that's in the back right now. And we want to create a seasonal patio seating area. So again, you can just go right up, get your coffee and your food, and be able to sit out back. And then you also have a water view off of Water Street. The other thing that we're trying to do, again, because this building sits a little bit lower in the roof line, is we want to build it up a bit, you know, as much as we can to kind of lift it up and give it a little bit more presence. So thank you very much for awarding us a facade grant. That was very helpful and very much appreciated. And I should say that the reason I'm here today is that we are working directly with the MEDC for the revitalization program and all of these acronyms, I can never say them all. So, but we are one of the finalists. And in order to check off the boxes of facade grant and the okay from the city to be behind this project is what is required. And so that's why we're also here asking for tax abatement so that we can complete the project. There you go. I can pass these around if you like. Sure.
Do you know yet what the siding material is?
What the siding material? We are painting brick. Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. And we're adding, like I said, we're adding, this is not here now, of course, a window area with awnings. We're bringing awnings to the front and awnings to the rear entrance where you would enter the back of the restaurant and also your salon entrance there, and then adding windows here. But what you don't see here is I'd also like to add some flower boxes. We really, really want the outside of this building to pop.
What color would you call that?
I would call that not quite what I'm doing. As these are being printed out, I'm like, that kind of is a little too crust green for me, a little too pasty. But there's going to be a little bit more green in here than blue. So we're working through the color palette right now. But it's going to be on the lighter side. Just not quite. This is as close as I could get for tonight's meeting.
I like the idea of green though because we have a lot of blue coming out. So mm-hmm. I think green would be a nice accent.
Thank you. And it'll be nicely lit. So even when we're not open, we'll have really soft lighting again from inside and out. So really bright in that corner. So if anybody wants to look up close, I'll just leave these right here.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
I'll make a motion to approve the tax abatement.
Okay, is there a second to this motion to approve the tax abatement?
I'll second that. Okay,
who's second?
Brandon, will you specify the number of years, please?
Oh, sorry, yeah. I'd love to. Usually 10 years. Yeah. Okay. So I'll make a motion. Recommend a commercial rehabilitation tax abatement for 10 years for 232 North Main Street.
And is there a second to that motion? All right. Motion is seconded. So we're going for discussion. Okay. Does anyone have any questions or concerns for Ms. Curtis?
Heather. Sorry.
My mom's asking like three times.
Thank you. And I apologize that we had brown paper that was falling down. I was horrified. So at least we got graphics up in the meantime. Time for the parade. Yes, we're hoping to be open by the holiday season at this point. So,
this year?
This
year?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fingers crossed.
Well, then, if there are no more questions or concerns, I will call this motion to a vote.
Costin?
Yes.
Krongeier?
Yes.
Eckhart?
Yes.
Con King?
Yes.
Mallory?
Yes.
Schneider?
Yes.
Stemke?
Yes.
Villanueva?
Yes.
Weir?
Yes.
Thank you, everyone.
All right, motion carried unanimously. And that brings us to the next item. Consideration to recommend an obsolete property tax rehabilitation tax abatement as authorized by the Public Act 140 of 2000 for Dionysus 2020 LLC located at 225 North Main Street. Is there a motion to recommend for a period of years this tax abatement for Dionysus LLC?
I would make a motion to recommend a 10-year obsolete property rehabilitation tax abatement for Dionysus.
And is there a second to this motion? Our motion is seconded. Is there any, it's now on the table for discussion. Are there any questions, comments, or concerns?
My understanding is it's pretty similar to the same process.
Is it because there's an MEDC grant involved and the city support is working for city support?
Yes, the MEDC is working with this property owner as well. This is the Johnson Studio building.
It's labeled that because it's unusable, basically. That's obsolete.
There must be a few different kinds of tax abatements. So whereas the cutters are going for commercial rehab, these people are going for obsolete. So
currently, the two apartments above the building, according to Tom, had knob and tooth wiring and have not been updated ever, basically. So they were really unusable properties, and they'll be completely remodeled as part of this project.
On the worksheet that Tom does, they're asking for 12 years.
This particular... Yes, the obsolete property rehabilitation tax abatement can go up to 12 years, where the previous one can only go up to 10.
Yes. Is that what they are asking for, is it 12 years?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, on their application.
Right.
But are we on for that?
I mean, I want to make sure I knew that. I would amend the motion to do a 12 year for that.
Okay, motion to amend, to recommend a 12 year. Obsolete rehabilitation tax amendment and seconded.
There might be some sort of rule with their grant that it has to be 12 years. I don't know, but that may provide 12 years.
Okay, is there any other?
I gather Tom's worksheet actually is recommended 12. Mm-hmm. So that's his assessment, right?
Yes. And on her application, she's requesting.
Yeah.
So, can anyone request 12 years? I mean, can Ms. Cutter recommend? I mean,
no, not. They're going for two different acts.
So, what is the range for the other one, and what is the range for this one? Because, like Brett's saying, maybe that's a requirement, but we don't really know that.
I've never gone through an obsolete one, but all the regular tax abatements that we've gone through, 10 years was the max.
10 years is what I'm at.
Yes.
I don't know what the max range is for
this. 10 years is the max for the commercial rehabilitation tax abatement. For the obsolete property rehabilitation tax abatement, 12 years is the max that can be awarded.
I think, you know, it's not a total tax.
Right.
All right, then, if there are no further comments, questions, or concerns, the motion currently on the table is for anyone which has been seconded is to recommend a 12-year obsolete property tax abatement. If there's no other comments, I'll bring this to a vote.
Costin?
Yes.
Krongeier?
Yes.
Eckhart?
Yes.
Con King?
Yes.
Mallory?
Yes.
Schneider?
Yes.
Stemke?
Yes.
Villanueva?
Yes.
Weir?
Yes.
Thank you, everyone.
All right, motion carried unanimously. That brings us to the next item on the agenda, the treasurer's report. And I'll turn it over to Bobby Cronbein.
Everyone received copies in the packet of all of the various reports. Questions on any of that? Our cash balance as of the end of June, which is the budget year, is $515,571. There will still be some expenses coming out of that because Bridget does receive still invoices that she will pay in August, so that figure will be reduced. And if you look at the budget report, because of COVID, we did not spend what we had budgeted, so we are retaining more than what we thought we would. So yeah. So the main thing then is after we do our DDA plan and our chip renewal, and then those projects, we move into that SPEI program, which we want to be involved in the fall. This balance, some of that fund balance, we need to allocate that towards what these big projects are that we are going to do. We have to do that for our, I think, for our next TIF report that goes in.
Yes.
So that's. Other than that, any questions?
I think our budget was approved.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Does anyone else have any other questions for Ms. Cronbein? Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Next is placemaking committee, Christy Stempke. Outreach committee.
since the write-up that was in the packet, I just want everyone to know that for the holiday catalog that Beth Smith went around to businesses last Thursday to remind them that Monday, this coming Monday, is the start of the photography sessions with Lindsay. I did get a call from Lindsay today, and she does have some spots. People have called to reserve, so yay, members getting out. It was in the chamber newsletter last week, and it's going to be in the chamber newsletter this week. And Lindsay thought maybe if we could put something in social media about Friday of this week, Katie, just to remind everybody they got that Monday starts where they people can make their sessions with her, start bringing their stuff in.
Okay, great.
And then everybody received my sign up email for selling merchandise. We have open spots for July and August. I'm keeping a 2-month schedule there. So as July drops off, we'll pick up September through the end of the farmer's market, which is end of October. So thank you for those of you who signed up.
And sales are good.
Yes.
Yes, we've sold over $2,000 in merchandise so far.
That's all I have.
Now I turn this over to placemaking committee, Christy Stempke.
Placemaking hasn't met as a whole committee, but the Flowers at Festival Square got planted by Seedham the volunteers. Katie led the charge with the metal planters, which we haven't noticed those. They look really, really great, especially the soft ones. I trimmed the dead branches off of the trees in the main corridor of Main Street before the 4th of July parade so that that would not look so haggard, but there's a few down at the end that will involve a little more professional help, which placemaking will likely meet again in August or so to reflect on summer to make sure that we kind of problem solve anything this summer and then prepare for fall and winter to pour. So that is our placemaking.
Bye.
I had a tree in front of our office. It's
skinny.
Yeah. And I think it's the weeds at the base of the tree are drawing all the nutrition away from the tree. Is there a safe solution to get those weeds out of there?
Goal is to get some soil management, like a maintenance of soil, watering, and such. So we're working on that. Okay. But I know what
tree.
All right, thank you very much. Now I turn over to events committee, Brandon Muir.
So the big news or fun thing was we had our parade, our first one, thanks to everybody who was able to come out and celebrate and enjoy a beautiful day, a beautiful morning. It went really, really well. We were very happy with the turnout. I heard from a lot of senior people in the community. I'll be general about that. A lot of people said it was one of the most well-attended parades that they had seen in a long time. So we were very happy about that. We only had one runaway horse at the end, so that was pretty neat. But the horse was safely corralled and brought back to its trailer. No harm done to anyone there. So. And moving forward, we are focusing our energy now toward our fall events. We have some very dedicated volunteers who are working on putting together the Bridge Walk event, along with reaching out to businesses for sidewalk sales. So that's going to be our main priority, and then also building up some momentum for Ladies Night Out, Hospitality Night, and then holiday season parades. So we'll be meeting probably in a few weeks to get that ball rolling and get that squared away.
So sidewalk sales and the bridge walk.
Correct, yeah. For that's gonna be our focus at our next meeting, try to get those set. That'll be the first Saturday, or excuse me, it would be the Saturday Labor Day. So that's going to be our focus moving forward, trying to get that set up so that we are set to go in the thing.
Cool.
A lot of work's already been done, so that should be about an easy one for us.
All right, very good. Thank you very much. Now, Business Development Committee by Polly Schneider.
Yeah, we met last week, and we are going to do a district tour on the 16th, so next Friday. We came up with a survey that we're going to give to the businesses in the district just to collect some data to help us with the reporting that we need to do to help with the yearly impact report that Katie does, and just to give us a really good baseline of everything that's happening downtown, try to get a little bit of employment data, how many jobs have been created, you know, those types of things. So hopefully, hopefully by August, we'll be able to kind of give a synopsis of how that visit went. And it'll just be a good kind of a yearly thing for this committee to touch base with all of those businesses. And then after that, we'll move on to the next.
All right, thank you very much. And now TIF Renewal Committee. Kitty Dutchkowski and Bobby Frontline.
I think Paul and Danielle did a great job updating tonight. I really don't have anything to add in addition.
Okay, then next is the City Council report.
Yeah. Okay, so on the June 8th, Scott Susella talked to us for a while. And did the same thing with City Council. So that was neat. you guys have probably heard about the social district stuff. I think Kate said that's kind of an old now is kind of where that's at.
Sure. We met as a committee last week, and it was decided that there was really like a 50-50 split almost between business owners downtown, whether they were in favor of a social district throughout the downtown or not. So at this point, it's already July. I mean, this paperwork takes time to get into the liquor control. So it was decided to hold off for this summer, do further research from other communities, get feedback from other communities, how theirs progressed this summer. And if it's decided to move forward, work through all the paperwork this fall and submit it to liquor control. So we're ready to go right away in the spring next year.
What I drew from the council meeting was basically, I think most of them were against closing Pine Street. That's just my opinion. But we're still open to looking at the social districts. So we sold the fire truck for $3,335, so we're looking for that. It's gone. I actually had someone to tell me they wanted it. We talked about the chamber building there, the restrooms getting painted. That was approved in that meeting with an underwater theme. We accepted the property on the river, Chastain's property. It's right across from 320 South Main. It's going to be called Majestic River View Park. That was one of his stipulations, is my understanding. He wanted it to be called Majestic River View Park, because that's his family name, is Majestic. And I think they're going to put up a fence and have some sort of park on it. They put up a couple benches and something like that.
Where is that from?
It's, you know, where that Masters, what is it?
Master Repairs,
where they fix computer stuff. It's a yellow building kind of just across and down the street a little bit from it. If you're looking out your building, it's like right there.
Across from Ranger.
The property is like almost to the toilet paper factory. So we're going to appoint the new council person this next meeting at 6 o'clock. There's going to be a special meeting this next Tuesday here. The 6 o'clock special meeting before the 7 o'clock normal meeting. We're going to appoint that person hopefully there and get them all inducted or whatever, sworn in, whatever, yeah. And so that they can actually participate in that meeting. If you want to be on the ballot for this November, my understanding is you have to have your stuff in by July 8th was the last that I heard. So, you know anybody, let them know. Dan Sobalski, he's here now. That's great. I had that he was starting June 22nd. I think that got pushed back a little bit. Now he's here. Talked about the public hearings, which we've already really gone through. There's a project plan to replace a whole bunch of lead service lines in town. So apparently there are about 100, and this is. I'll just kind of read through this. They're replacing lines up to all houses that have lead pipes. So normally you would think that the city would replace lead lines from the middle of the street to the meter. But now, I don't know who's telling them to do this. Is it the USDA or something like that? Yeah, but they're saying now that the city has to replace all the lead lines from the meter into the house. I think it's a couple inches into the house or something like that. And so there's about 100 of them that we have to replace. And that is It's about $578,000 cost after the principal forgiveness. I don't know exactly how this all works, but it looks like it's $1 million, just over $1 million, but then we get paid $5,000 per fund that we do, something like that. And that's going to basically, I don't know, Dan, if you know how that works or not.
It's grant funded in order to eliminate those hazards.
Right.
We go in, we do the work, and then we seek reimbursement for that cost.
Is that extra money we're paying just going down to the water bill then over time?
No, I believe it's all grant funded.
All of it.
Actually, there's probably a good chance that we'll make a little, if we do it ourselves, or based on limited staff, another thing we're looking at is subcontracting those out. This way, our crews can stay on their normal task and we still get the lead removed from those pipes.
That's important if people still have lead pipes in their house. So that's good. More about the social district. Go through. We had some foreclosed properties that we waived the right refusal from the county. And yeah, July 8th for if you want to be on. The sewer plant, we're talking about the sewer plant. We bid that out, and we were assuming if it started at $14 million was what they said they thought it was going to be about. We were expecting it to be much lower than that, but it actually came in at $17 million was the low bid, so that's a lot higher than we thought. So I think they're trying to figure out what they're going to do for the extra. You know, we were hoping it was going to be more like $10 million or something. Limit. But so that's a lot of extra money, and I think they're working through how they're going to afford that. They got a part.
Sorry. I have a question. Yeah. Is the city going to use any of the money they're getting from the federal government because they can use the money towards water and sewer projects or the AFP? That, what is it, the ARP, whatever it's called?
That
we spent, well, Tom gave me the keys to the town on Thursday. And Thursday, I went through the engineering bid and we narrowed it down in terms of cost, eliminated a bunch of things, and I had to give them the tentative approval to move forward. So I said on my first day, I spent how many millions? So Tom's not even out the door in this. But we're going through that and we're looking at ways to pay. We do have a grant, and I don't remember the agency, but they'll pay 25% of the cost of the plant. And I think we're now closer, I think all said and done, it's about, I think, $20 million total. Yeah, and so I think there's a little bit of room in there, and we're going to look at a couple other things that we may add back in. I just spent the afternoon walking through the wastewater treatment facility and learned more about the plant, and I'm going to ask council to approve moving forward with the contract here on Tuesday. And also ask council to take a tour of the plant with me to see what truly is there. It's funny, a lot of that plant is above ground, but there's a whole lot of that plant that's underground. Some of those buildings are two stories, three stories deep. There's tunnels that connect them all. So it was kind of interesting today to see what was down there. And I think when you see it, and there's probably nobody that can argue with us that we need to replace it. I mean, there's stuff in there that's just, it's unreal.
Yeah, we had a couple of council people went through it, I know, 6 months ago or something like that. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a cool thing, but it just needs a lot of help.
It's, I mean, you got concrete that they have one piece of equipment, well, a series of pieces of equipment that are bolted into the concrete. The concrete is so old, it just pulls the bolts right out of the concrete. So they hook them in. And they might go a week, 2 weeks before they pull out of the concrete and then they have to redo them. So it's time. And I think hopefully we're going to start moving forward on that on Tuesday and then address some other issues.
Yeah.
But that lead is important. And then we also want to look at the meters because we do have a certain part of the town that has old meters that we need to update. And some of those meters, we think they're running on, they're only accounting for a partial amount of the water that's going through them right now. So.
They had a bar stream. Jason had a bunch of the guys working overtime for, I don't know, the last couple of years, probably, something like that. You know, basically scraping junk, you know, off of this thing. You know, they were, you know, they paying a couple hours of overtime a day, I think. And my understanding is they just got that replaced.
We were down there today and they were putting the final touches on it. But yeah, anything that goes, that is flushed down the toilet, goes there, and then it hits this the old way at a screen. Literally, it was a screen, like a filter. And they have to pull that screen out and literally scrape it by hand, with paint roller, the tool, obviously. But they have to scrape it. Now, with the design of this, it looks like a stainless steel conveyor belt that'll do the job for them. It'll actually take the solids or anything else that's in there and actually throws them in a bin so they don't have to deal with it. I think it was $490,000 to change.
Yeah. You know, when you're paying 2 hours over time a day, you know, that's going to cut that down in a few years, you know.
Plus, it's just a nasty job.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Well, it's simple. Nasty job. I went there right after lunch, so.
But really, if any of you are interested, I think Jason would be willing to do a tour. He has always been very willing with you know, every time I've asked him. And it's really eye-opening to walk through that place and see what they do. You know, yeah, he's very passionate about his job, making that water clean. He, you know, he tells me, you know, if I can get this and this and this and this, you know, for everything, that water, you know, if you look at the water that's going into the river, it's kind of brownish right now. He said that water would be cleaner than it comes in if you know, once this whole thing is done, you know, so. And that's all I got. Unless anyone has questions.
All right, thank you very much. And now the next item, the city manager's report.
Spent a lot of money to tour the wastewater treatment plant. I've been driving around town. I did attend the parade, and I thought it was fantastic. I did attend the 4th of July fireworks. That was great, too. A little bit about me. Some of you don't know me yet. I know quite a few of you I've had conversations with. I'm an economic developer and planner by trade. So a lot of the places where I worked, I started Main Street. Raised, you know, probably millions of dollars for, you know, Main Street organizations. I'm a big supporter of Main Street and downtown development. I think that's a key to any community. So any way I can help you, please, you know, contact me. You know, obviously, talk to Katie and she'll make sure I get the information. I'm looking forward to working with you guys. And if I can, if you can go around with you and kind of introduce yourselves, and kind of tell me who you're with or what your organization is or what you're interested in, that would help me out a lot. I'm starting over there. I heard last names, which were great, but I'm trying to connect.
I'm Christy Stuckey, co-owned Nourish with Emily. So I've been on the DDA for 2 or 3 years now, 2.5, I think. Parks and Rec as well. And the fair board. So a lot of community wrangling and trying to centralize conversations is kind of what I'm passionate about, and community wellness. So we're here.
I'm Brandon Weir. I'm a financial advisor with Edward Jones. My office is right here in town. I've been on the board since last fall time. I'm also the events committee chair, as you can probably gather from my excitement about the parade. I hope that's enough information. I don't have a resume as Christy, she's much more, but no, I'm involved with the Giants Club in town as well. So like most of us here, I think community involvement is near and dear to our hearts, and we want to see each other thrive. And that's, I hope I can contribute as much as I can.
Yeah, if you have to come speak to the bonus, if you can speak for at some point.
Absolutely.
Hey, I'm Emily Eckhart. I also am one of the owners of Nourish, and I grew up in Sheboygan, had the chance to move out west for a handful of years, and, you know, when I grew up in Sheboygan, I was like, oh, this is awful, I can't wait to leave. And then I left, and I'm like, no, there's really a lot of opportunity here. So Christy and I kind of got together, reconnected at high school, and my main goal of being on this board specifically is just making downtown a more inviting place than it was when I was a kid. And yeah, just being able to see our community actually thrive. Like, I don't really like when people come in and like, oh, there's really like a lot of empty storefronts. There's really not a lot going on here. It's like, well, actually there is, just not mainstream like all the other communities with big box stores, you know, like I think you have the opportunity here to be more mom and pop and to really embrace nature and all that we have.
I have two questions.
Yeah.
One, what's Nourish?
We're right on the corner by Festival Square there. So mm-hmm. we have a movement studio, a eatery, and the local food market.
Number two, where'd you go out west?
I live in Crested Butte, Colorado for a winter, and then I lived on the coast in California.
You know me. So, director of the visitors bureau in the chamber, Polly Schneider. I'm a Rotarian. I am on the Salvation Army Advisory Council and the Straits Area Community Foundation Board, amongst a lot of other stuff, but those are the my claims to pay. And so I feel where I could do the most of it.
I'm Brett Mallory. I'm on the council and on the DDA. One of the reasons I wanted to be on the DDA, you know, I live right near downtown. I live, and you know, we walk downtown with our kids all the time to go to Dairy Queen. The whole thing. They're walking downtown right now, actually. I'm a mailman in town, so if you want to know where anything is or somebody moved to, I can tell you. I'm active in my church. I play music there all the time. I don't do anything else.
Tommy Frommeyer, and I have a software development company downtown. We develop software for the courts, district and circuit courts in Michigan. I got involved with this originally working on getting the Main Street program, the city in the Main Street program. I was on the Main Street steering committee, and then was appointed this board the same time as Christy was. I'm the chair of the outreach committee. That's it. I mean, and I'm on this because I was frantic back when we got involved with the Main Street program that the city was just going to die. I mean, we had so many businesses downtown. And although I'm not from here originally, I summered up here as a child and moved up here then as in my early 20s. So I raised my family up here, and it was a booming community at that time. We had a hospital, we had what, five schools, elementary schools, and I mean, it was, and then just to see how it just slowly was dying, and it was really, really scary. And so there's a group of us that just got together and worked really hard to get to where we are now and more.
You'll hear from me again, but one thing that I've been very passionate about is communication, because before I was on council, I wasn't really involved in any city things. And the only way I ever knew anything that was going on in town was this little newsletter that came out quarterly. And so I guess one of my focuses has been, how do we get information into people's hands that are kind of apathetic towards what's going on in town, you know, so they can see there's tons going on. So that's all.
My name is Christine King. I'm on the Planning Commission, and my husband and I own Hive North in Sheboygan, very new business just opened last Labor Day, right before it shut down and opened and shut down. I'm like Bobby, I came here in my 20s with no children, and now I've raised three children here in Sheboygan. They're grown up and gone, and and I was a teacher here, and we talked about that for a couple of years. I was a teacher for Sheboygan Area Schools, which I strongly still advocate for. I am employed by the Michigan Education Association. So I advocate for the teachers here and the tip and the mid and the Eastern Upper Peninsula. So
that one my class.
When?
Sociology 101.
Yes, he has also taught Brett in my class sociology 101. And I love Sheboygan, honestly. We came here, I shouldn't say I had no kids. I had a 2-month-old baby, my oldest, when we moved to Sheboygan. And you know, something in me said that, like, I'm not going to be leaving this town. I mean, I just, even though that was the plan to just stay for the summer, you know, it's like 33 years later now, and we're still here. My husband grew up here. But yeah, I think it's got so much potential. And even in the down times, I think it's a community with a lot of heart and a lot of people that really care about each other. And that's what I find appealing about Sheboygan.
Hey, I'm attorney Aaron Villanueva, junior law partner at Lindsay Law Partners, chairman of the board. I also am part of the business development committee. And we spoke back at the police department picnic. I think that was like a week ago or two already. Wow, time flies. I'm not sure what else to add about myself. I moved to Sheboygan about 2 years ago for work, and just
where were you from?
Downstate from Canton, Michigan. Okay. So I went to MSU Law School, former Detroit College of Law, of course, former as of like many, many decades ago. But, when was that?
I said, get it right.
And moved up to here for work, practicing law for 2 years. Lived just outside of town, so I'm not technically within the city, but work within the city. And just recently got involved with participating in the white community. So I'm not sure what else to add about myself. Is there any specific questions?
You're close to time, you're part of the city.
That's what I like to think about.
Hello, Dan. My name is John. I'm John Costin, a business owner in Sheboygan. Along with Bobby and about 8 others, we had a steering committee, which progressed us to becoming recognized as a Main Street community, which was a very big day for us. Since then, more people have been involved, and our Main Street activities have certainly flourished. And it's nice to feel part of what we think we have, this momentum in Sheboygan. I think when Tom Eustace the other day made his few remarks at his farewell party, I think he was leaving at a very nice time when Sheboygan was most definitely on the up and up. My wife is Marcella. She and I, we fell in love with Sheboygan, and we have invested. We're here for a long time. We're not going away. And Sheboygan's been very good to us. It's a very friendly community. It responds nicely. It's a nice place to live, and I hope you'll be very happy here. We have a lot of work to do, but there's a lot of very willing people. And I think one of the key things when we had our steering committee was that we had a volunteer force of, we talked about 100 people that time. I think it's greater now. But there's a lot of people to carry the workload, which is very nice. And it's great to be able to persuade nice people like Jane and Jeff to come and and invest in Sheboygan, and there are many others. A lot of people have actually invested a lot over the last 2 or 3 years. So I think we're joining at a great time. COVID's hopefully disappearing, and we're all going to come out again. Well,
back a few dots here and there, so I'm but hopefully I can remember everybody's
name. Kevin, that announced the public comments. Is there any public comments? Yes, please.
Good evening, Drew Lofgren. And I'm wondering if this committee has any plans of putting the flags back up on the lamps throughout town. They used to be there, and I understand that they've lost some of the attachments that hold the flag, and I don't know what the deal is, but I'd sure like to see them back up again in between the flowers. There's an empty lamp post that could hold a flag.
It is on the radar. Is that project just because of everything else happening that wasn't necessarily put to the priority of decor, but it has continually come back around as something that we need to get back up there.
Because if you drive around,
yeah, no, I know.
The towns that are around us, they all have.
They look nice. They do look nice. So they are fresh. So.
Yes.
Do we have this one?
As my understanding, they're pretty tattered.
Are these
retired now? But I'm not exactly sure the state of all of them.
Are these actual flags, or are they like the lamp, the banners? Okay, yeah. All right.
But yes,
we can.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, then board member comments.
That was, in fact, the former Citizen of the Year, actually speaking. You were Citizen of the Year for Sheboygan?
Yes.
Yeah.
Perfect. I don't have any other one.
All right.
Just really quick, if you guys don't know, the Chamber granted the Arts Council funds to do it's going to look like you're under the river in the hallway going into the bathrooms in Washington Park. So, it's going to be really cool. It's, yeah, and then Bernie's going to be in the park. They're starting to kind of work on getting that set. So probably August sometime, we'll do like a big kind of open house thing in the park and check out all the freshness and all that good stuff. Lots of good action happening. That would really make it nice for all the visitors.
On the roof, it's going to make a big difference too.
The roof, and it will be painted also. The building will be painted. Once they're done with the roof, they can start painting.
Sure.
So, yeah.
I want to add to my events committee report. I forgot. We still need a few sponsors, since I'm sitting here with a few business owners. Just throwing that out there. I'll be reaching out to you. And our biggest sponsor is the Visitors Bureau, I think, in your group. And Thursday nights are going real well. That was the other thing I wanted to add. Thursday nights are really coming together. We're getting a lot of participation. People are coming out. So that's gaining traction, gaining momentum. So we're really, really happy and excited about that project.
And to that, brace yourselves, the steel drum band is what date?
15th.
The 15th. So just kind of spread the word, let everybody know downtown's going to be crazy. Like, literally. Yeah, yeah. There's over 2,000 people that come to the park that night.
So
you want me to march in? Yeah, it's that always is a big one.
Is that a local group?
About 35 miles away.
Potosi, it's a group of high school students that actually play steel drums like you hear in the islands and stuff.
Were they in Houston?
Probably.
Last weekend?
Yeah, probably. Yep, they play all over.
I'm living out there temporarily. I came down and like the whole town was full, and I mean, there was cars parked, there were people everywhere, and I'm like,
Helston? Yeah.
Yeah. I thought there was an airplane crash or something. There were people everywhere, and I'm not, you know, I can spend night walking around, and I'm looking, and I see a cat, you know, the person, you know what I mean? So I was like, what the heck's going on?
Yeah,
I can hear the, okay. Yeah, there was a ton of people. I was, yeah. I bet you there was a couple thousand people there.
Yeah, and people come from all over to see it too. They kind of follow around.
It's great.
So it's going to be a huge night.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, the only steel drum they have around.
Yeah. That's what I was wondering. I didn't know.
My quick addition is just the Katie has the recycling receptacles ordered and the cigarette butt recycling receptacles ordered, which are two big things for downtown. And then we are going to be working towards also the Water Street bathroom getting freshened up with support from our vision as well. So the rain garden looks nice over at that bathroom, and the arrows to the bathroom are more around town as well, thanks to Andy. So public restrooms have a little more emphasis now.
And we've actually since received the cigarette butt recycling receptacles. We have them now. We're just waiting on the custom stickers for them. So they'll be going up very soon. Yes. We can start moving on that now. Yes, that we are officially in the new budget year. Yes.
Okay. Polly, there is a ribbon cutting on.
Pig and whistle. That's a chamber thing.
You're only invited to the pig and whistle. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. If there is no further board member comments, then I'll ask for a motion to adjourn. And I call this meeting.
Thank you, everyone.
Okay.